Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
How's it going?
Pretty good. I do have a little bit of the sniffles.
And
I hope we don't get a negative review on Apple Podcasts because of it. I know how sensitive you were to that feedback last time.
It's funny. When you said you had the sniffles, I was like, perfect timing. We're talking about medical benefits and doctors and insurance and all that. So sniffle away. But I totally, honestly, I forgot about the review. That's how much I like, I hear those and I'm like, do I really sniffle a lot? And then we got like 10 or 15 really positive, lovely reviews that made our day. So a big thank you to everyone. But hey, I'm sorry you have the sniffles.
It's all right. I am on the mend because I did a virtual doctor's visit, which I've done before, but in the past I've done them as video calls. And this one was a chat. So they get like even lighter touch than they have been in the past. And I am like, I am all for it. I hope this is the future of all medicine.
I've done that on GoodRx before, which is a little bit, you know, it's a different model. So it's, you know, kind of meant to be that. But that's interesting. You literally just chatted with a doctor, probably not even a doctor, probably like a PA.
No, it was a doctor. And it was through Anthem, and they outsourced to a third party medical group, and they can do one off prescriptions for you. But I did a chat bot thing with some symptoms and then got connected with somebody. It was $39, got a prescription for some antibiotics, which is what I told them I needed. And I identified the issue myself, really. Otherwise, if it was a mystery, I might have gone to see like a real doctor, but I knew what it was. I've had it in the past, but it was like, I didn't have to talk to anybody. It took me 10 minutes, went to CVS and picked up my meds. God, what a great system.
That's awesome. Those are the situations that on my old coverage, when I was working, when I had a high deductible plan, those visits would cost me $150 bucks. Like I didn't have any virtual, you know, setup and I would just kind of avoid going to the doctor, which wasn't really great. So
you would just make everybody suffer through your colds with you.
Maybe they must have been listening to an episode back when I was employed, and I probably was sniffling because I was sick
and too expensive couldn't afford
to go see the doctor. Right. So if they want to chip in to, I'm just kidding. So today we are finally going to get into a topic that we've been teasing for a while. We've done multiple episodes on medical benefits, insurance. We've got, if only I knew the number, Mike. What was that number?
139.
I'm 139.
Was it 139? I don't know.
No. But you make up numbers sometimes, and then I'm like,
I deliver them very confidently.
Yeah, and then I'm like, oh, that was it, right? It was episode 62. Actually,
I was way off.
That was one of the very first ones where we did how to choose the right medical insurance at work, because you used to host those sessions and you would put together a spreadsheet. And that's a great primer on just all the things you should consider. And then we also, when we did our retirement series, if you remember, actually we did another one I just saw, also 118, we did its benefit season. So how to pick the right one. We like to do, I think that was like top of mind at work when benefit season would roll around, because we were always getting questions on that. And then we did an episode where Greg and I talked, or maybe Greg wasn't actually on, but it was part of the five-part series of announcing Greg and I retiring early, and it was episode 139. Wait, that was right. Look at you.
Was it?
Yeah, that was the one. That was the one. Oh, funny. That was the last. We've done three different types of episodes on medical benefits and insurance. That 139 one was actually Greg and I talking about what our plan was for insurance during early retirement. Now, that was in March of 2022, almost a year ago. We hadn't yet actually retired, so we were doing research and we kind of had a rough plan for what we would do. But we have actually now been through it in real, you know, real life, IRL. We've been through it and we know what we have done, and we can tell you all of the, you know, cuts and scrapes and bruises, to use that metaphor, that we've gotten and learned in going through the process. Because we had a guess on kind of some early research we had done for that episode of what we would end up doing. Like, we actually thought we would do the marketplace right out of the gate, but we ended up doing Cobra for a big chunk of, well, for all of last year after we left. So for like 6 months we were doing Cobra because we learned it was going to be like of similar costs and it was just easier to stay on our previous insurance. And so we really started our new plans January 1st of this year. And we are now right at the end of February. We wanted to actually wait to do this episode so that we could, well, I wanted to wait so that I really had a couple months of actually using the plan to be able to talk about the sign up process and then what I've seen, or what we've seen, what Greg and I have both seen in terms of actually engaging with doctors on the plan and finding new doctors and you know, all of that. And so we're going to get into, you know, all the nitty gritty of what we've learned, our advice and tips as a result, and then some very specific costs. Like, we'll tell you exactly what we're paying, and we'll save that part for the end. You know, one quick caveat is this is 100% US focused. So we're talking about the Affordable Care Act marketplace plans that are available in the United States. So if you're outside the US, this doesn't apply to you. But if you're outside the US, you actually probably have better options.
Yeah, you're in much better shape.
Yeah, depending on where you are. But for where many of our listeners outside the US are, in Europe, Australia, et cetera, there actually are better, more affordable plans available to you anyways.
So before we get into this, one message that I like to deliver to people, and Maggie, I think this will apply to a lot of the conversations you've had when people are asking you how you're going to retire, is that health insurance is just a product. And when you get it through work, you know, it's called benefits and you get a discount on it, but it's still just a product that your company is buying and providing to you as a quote unquote benefit. There are a ton of options out there to go buy this product yourself and to find coverage. It's not easy like it is getting it through work, but it's still out there like any other insurance product. It's common that the first question people ask about early retirement is, what are you going to do for health insurance? Because it seems very daunting, but it is still just something that you can go buy. And Maggie, I'm excited to hear the details of how you have solved this for your family.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, it is daunting. It because, and I'll get into this, it's an overwhelming amount of choices, and it's not always super clear. It's overcomplicated at times. It's not well documented. There's certain things about the site that are actually super great and well done, and then there's other things that like aren't super clearly explained, and you kind of need someone to just like tell you the basics. But it is daunting, but it's not. It's just like a lot of things. You just kind of plan ahead, and it takes some time and research. And I thought I had done a lot of that back when we did the previous episode. And then I was just like, wow, I barely scratched the surface on really, really like getting into the underbelly of the marketplace and how it works. And
the dark underbelly of insurance.
The dark underbelly. So I'll mention a couple of things. First off, we are only doing medical insurance. We are opting to just not have dental or vision insurance. I don't have any like vision needs anyways, right now, at least. Greg does, but he just went to the, what do you call that? Oh, the eye doctor. I couldn't think of the word for that. He just went to the eye doctor. I've never been to an eye doctor. Actually, I haven't been. It's been a long time. Anyways, he just went and just paid cash, right? It was a couple hundred bucks. So you really don't need like dental and vision insurance, or just not that important. And so it's not a big deal. And then certain dentists, like I talked about in episode 139, have like certain kind of prepaid plans where you get some level of coverage for the year for your cleanings and for any dental emergencies. But at this point, we're just not doing that. There are dental options in the marketplace plans. We are just not using them. And so I can't speak to them because we didn't really look into them in great detail. There's also private insurance plans, which, you know, are an option. We didn't really look into them in great detail. But what's funny is I kept having someone from United Healthcare like kept reaching out to me via text. Once your info's in there, I don't know how information like gets out, but someone kept reaching out to me and telling me I could have a, you know, $0 copay if I was health, all these things. And, you know, if you go with private insurance, you don't get a subsidy. And that's a big thing that led us to want to stay in the marketplace, because we qualify for a pretty nice subsidy.
Also, the private insurance plans don't have to, as far as I know, follow the same legal requirements of the marketplace plans, like pre-existing conditions. So if you buy a plan outside of that, they can do whatever they want.
Yeah. And actually, to that point, what they kept telling me was, if I'm healthy, I could have a $0 copay.
Yeah.
Because that's the point. I was like, they don't want to touch me if I'm not healthy. And Greg and I are both like very healthy, but we both do have some pre-existing conditions. And so, yeah, I didn't even go down that path because the subsidy kind of took it out of interest for me. But you're right. It wouldn't have been a great setup anyways if you have any sort of. And I don't really like supporting whatever. I mean, I just like the fact that they don't have to cover pre-existing conditions. And like, I just that is a huge turn off.
That this was like a thing not too long ago is mind blowing. That someone could just like, that you'd be on your own if you had some issue. Oh my God. Thank God we saw this.
Like, yes, I agree. That, you know, regardless of your political beliefs, you know, whatever you want to think, I will say the Affordable Care Act and the Marketplace Plan, the fact that this even exists in the United States now is a huge step forward. Like, this didn't exist before. All you had were those private insurance options if you didn't have a job and you wanted to, you know, go do something, go get some sort of formal insurance. And so so anytime where I'm kind of criticizing something, I'm doing it from the angle of just trying to give you guys some tips on what's hard about it and what I would suggest to navigate the complexity of this process. But let me be clear, like, this is a really great benefit that is now available, you know, in the United States. And I'm, you know, incredibly thankful for it because it's one of the things that is allowing us to retire early and to have good, dependable medical insurance. Okay. Also, we're not insuring our kids through this. We could, and the whole subsidy situation would be different. I'll talk about a little bit of that at the end. But our kids can be covered with at a better rate on our exes. Like, my husband doesn't even pay for health insurance. It's free at his company. And so it just makes more sense for us to put our kids there. We could have kept them with us, though. If we didn't have another option, that's what we would have done. And it would still be, you know, reasonably affordable. So look, like I was saying earlier, the biggest thing is this takes time and research. So if you're planning on leaving your job in the next couple of years, or maybe next couple of months, whatever, like, get in there as soon as possible and start to understand your specific situation, because you can go into, we'll put the link in the show notes, but there's an actual place where, like, when you go to healthcare.gov, which is the website for all of this, you can actually go and create an account, but you don't need to. There's a place where you can go in where you're not logged in and you just click see plans. And again, we'll put a direct link in the show notes, but it's literally healthcare.gov/see-plans. And you can try out tons of scenarios. You can put in different income levels. You can put in your dependents. Like, for us, we have dependents, which changes the amount of subsidies we get, but they're not being insured. So that's a whole different kind of category. And so you can put in all your unique circumstances and you can see the actual plans for that year. You also need to realize, you know, you can only get into the marketplace, just like kind of, you know, insurance at a company, Mike. There's an annual enrollment period where you have to enroll. And so there's an annual enrollment period for the marketplace. I don't remember the exact dates, but there's plenty of communication about it. Or if you have, God, what do you call it, Mike?
Life event.
A life event. If you have a life event, which losing your job is a life event, according to, you know, the marketplace and healthcare.gov. And so if you have a life event like that, then you can get into it at any point. So there's these special enrollment periods is what they call them in healthcare.gov. And so a life event triggers you for that. And again, losing your job or leaving your job. I actually had to like double check this at one point because I was like, wait, I still qualify because I purposely left my job, right? I wasn't trying to think of the word, like, you know, I don't qualify for unemployment. Like, I left my job. I was not let go from my job. And so, yeah, they don't care about that. They just care that you now no longer basically qualify for health insurance somewhere else. That's what they're looking for. And I will say, you know, I always thought, Mike, at our company and all companies, there was kind of an overwhelming amount of choices and it almost like gets you with decision fatigue. There's even more choices in the marketplace. I mean, there's like hundreds of plans available. And they have all these funky names and there'll be like 10 that are kind of the same Cigna plan, but they're slightly different. And so the number and types of plans is incredibly complicated.
One easy way to start to filter through those choices, and Maggie, I agree with you. I've done some exploration on the site and there's a zillion of them, but they fall into basic categories. So the first way that they break these down is by HMO and PPO, and that's the type of network that the providers are going to be in, and there's a big difference in cost, and we'll get some more detail on this later once we jump into your specifics, Maggie. But then the other thing that happens is that they have different combinations of premiums and deductibles, and they categorize these as bronze, silver, gold, and all company plans that you'd see is going to be the same way, and they might call them something different, but it's basically your gold or diamond or platinum is going to be low deductible, high premium, and then your lesser metals are going to be your low deductible, high premium. And the interesting thing about the way that this works financially is that they all end up being about the same amount. You either pay more monthly and then you have less to pay out of pocket before you start receiving benefits, or you pay very little monthly, but you have a huge deductible you need to reach before you start to receive benefits. The cost to the insurance company, they design them to average out to be the same.
Yeah, Mike, I think that's a really helpful reminder that we talk about a lot in some of those earlier episodes we referenced earlier, of just that in the end, you're likely paying the same. It's just you're kind of predict, you're taking your chances, right? You're having to kind of predict what medical needs you're going to have and where you want to take some risk. And how you want to like budget for your health insurance. And then look, you know, we'll get into the subsidies more, but I think that is also something that's unique in these new plans that's really interesting. So, right. So the options are complicated, but I will say the site actually does a really good job at allowing you to remove some of the complication and kind of narrow down the plans that might actually be most applicable to you. And so I'll get a little bit more into that and some recommendations around that in a minute. You know, the other note I would mention is, and this is going to, a lot of this stuff's going to seem detailed, but I really want to share it because there are a lot of unique aspects of how this marketplace works that I think are just helpful. And I've not seen a lot of great breakdowns available on kind of all of these different things to consider. So the app, when you get to the application itself, it can be kind of finicky. So for example, and not finicky is the wrong word, it doesn't understand early retirement. I'll put it that way, right? It's not designed for people early retiring. And that maybe that's a better way to say it.
What
does it
mean? What do you mean you would leave your high paying job so early in life?
Right. It doesn't understand. Yes. So it asks questions like, it kept asking what my December income was, right? And I didn't have any. And so I put none, and then it would kick me into Medicaid and it wouldn't let me select a plan. When I have a deferred, I have income coming in 2023, but it's coming in once a year as part of a DCP, right? As part of my deferred compensation plan and then rental property stuff and other things. And so when it asked me, I answered the questions very literally and it sort of screwed me up and sent me into the wrong place as a result. And I actually talked to a rep about this, and the next thing I'm going to talk about is reps, but I talked to a rep about this. And she was like, oh, no. Just put in like an estimate of like what you made, like divide what you made last year when you were working by 12 and put something in, because it's putting you in the wrong place, you know? And so there's some things you need to do to kind of understand how the application is. And that to me was the most finicky. Like it did not, most of the application, you know, there's definitions and it kind of helps you through it pretty well. But that thing really threw me off because I answered it literally and then it sent me into the wrong place as a result. And so the other thing is, do you need a rep? Because there are all of these like rep and kind of insurance brokers that exist around the plan. And once you put it, it'll actually ask you through the sign up process if you want to be like connected with someone, I think. And then also, I had a couple people mention that to me and they had like suggested a broker. And so I'd been texting with some people. And I think a bunch of people actually ended up reaching out to me. I think once your information's in the system, I started getting texts from people, from brokers. And the one thing I learned, so I finally talked to a couple reps and I actually was just doing it more as part of like research. I didn't think I needed to speak to one, but I was kind of curious what would come of it. And I talked to a couple, and the thing I kind of learned through it is, if you're like a detail oriented person who's going to do the level of research that I'm going to do on this, a rep doesn't do any, a rep actually does less for you than you will do for yourself, if that makes sense. So I was asking a rep all sorts of detailed questions and they didn't know the answers to it. They were going to like go into the thing and play around with it. And I was like, okay, well, I've already done that and I could do that myself. I just wanted you to like give me the fast track tips to this thing. And so basically what a rep does is they will help you through the process and they will help you run different searches and scenarios for things if you need that help. Now, I'm a like DIY hands-on person. And so I was going to do all of that myself, just like I would, you know, for other things financially. But if you're not and you're kind of overwhelmed by the process, like a rep will help you through things. And you can call them a rep or an insurance broker. And my understanding from everyone I've spoken to is you don't pay them anything. They get some sort of kickback somewhere in the system. They're paid by someone, but they're not paid by you. It's not costing you any money. I'm not sure if they're getting paid through the marketplace, through the government or through, you know, kickbacks from the actual plans that people end up selecting as a result or what. But it's not coming from you. So it's not costing you any money. But my experience is it really added zero value also. Other than one of them did give me that like December tip when I was kind of asking that question. Okay, so the next thing is really to understand the plan levels, which Mike just talked about a little bit. So I'm not going to go into great detail on it, but there are bronze, silver, gold, and actually now there's a platinum level too. And there's a whole, we'll put a link in the show notes, but like there's a really nice page on the marketplace. They have some good content on the site where they explain what Mike just said to you, right? Which is, you know, there's different levels of, you know, what you're paying up front, whether you're paying a higher monthly premium or higher cost when you need care. And they explain it pretty well, right? It's one or the other, right? And so in the bronze plan, as an example, you're paying the lowest monthly premium, but the highest cost when you actually need care. And so the website is helpful for, you know, that kind of content information. The real kind of like gem of what I learned through this process that I would like to share with all of you is what's called cost sharing reductions. So there is, you need to understand your plan, you need to understand subsidies, and then you need to understand cost sharing reductions, which I'll get into in a second. And then there's this thing called easy pricing. Those are some of the terms that are kind of helpful to know, right? Just the levels, cost sharing reductions, and then easy pricing. And easy pricing is just kind of like a tag they have on certain plans, and their definition of it, I wouldn't get overly concerned about the things that are tagged with easy pricing. I think it's a little bit of a, I was going to say like a marketing thing, but just to simplify stuff for people. There's a good definition of easy pricing on their website, but it's basically just where they've got kind of more simplified and comparable prices on certain plans.
Now, before we get into subsidies and cost sharing reductions, which I'm interested to hear your thoughts, Maggie, one way to think about this is that a subsidy is the same as what your company is doing for you when you have a employer sponsored plan. So your plan on the open market costs $1,500 a month. The company is subsidizing you $1,000. That's the quote unquote benefit. And so the subsidy on the marketplace works in the exact same way. It lowers your monthly premium.
Yep, that is a great comparison. And I actually hadn't thought about specifically comparing it to, yes, it's what the company is paying for you now. And like you said, a lot of people don't realize that their company is subsidizing, pretty heavily subsidizing the cost of their medical insurance. Okay, so subsidies, they're clutch, right? And they can be quite generous, especially in early retirement. So essentially, the amount of subsidy that you qualify for is based on your AGI, which is your adjusted gross income. Do you want to like further break down AGI, Mike?
No, you nailed it.
Okay, so you have to estimate your adjusted gross income as part of your application process. And if you're wrong about it, well, so let's say I estimated my adjusted gross income for 2023. And based on that, I get a certain amount of a subsidy. And if I am wrong about that, I will pay it back in my year-end taxes. So let's say I got an $800 a month subsidy and I should have gotten, and I was off on my estimate of what my salary is going to be, because I don't know. There's a bunch of unknowns in terms of certain income. Like my deferred compensation is related to how well the market's doing, right? And it could swing a decent amount. And so if I'm off and I actually really only qualified for a $600 subsidy, then I'll pay I'm not sure what they call it, a penalty or something in my taxes where I pay back the $200 a month. So then at that point, I'll pay $2,400 back in my year-end taxes.
So stay tuned for episode 240 and when we find out how Maggie did on this.
Yeah, but I feel Greg and I spent a lot of time really looking at where we felt like was the right estimate, so that we weren't going to end up over or underestimating, and then having to, like, if you're the other thing is, if you're way off, if I overestimated my income for 2023 and said, hey, I think I'm going to make 100,000, but I only ended up making 50,000, then I also would get back extra subsidy at the end of the year, right? If I didn't get enough of a subsidy. So it is nice that in your year-end taxes, they're going to kind of make you right on your subsidy. And so ultimately, yeah, we're going to proactively manage our adjusted gross income to optimize for subsidies. And look, one quick comment on that. Like, I've been, for 20 years, I've just paid more than average into a system that is creating these subsidies. And yes, now I am going to benefit from the subsidies. I don't feel bad about that. I'm essentially making, you know, the amount of income we'll have is maybe the equivalent of a teacher's income. And as a result, we qualify for some pretty nice subsidies. And I all of a sudden have better insurance than I had when I was employed, which is fascinating. But when I say proactively manage my AGI, just as a reminder for people, your adjusted gross income is essentially your income minus some key things, like if you're running a business. So our rental properties generate income, but they also generate a lot of expenses and depreciation and other things. And so that actually is pulled out of our adjusted gross income. Any money you put into a IRA, a solo 401k, et cetera, is pulled out of your adjusted gross income, or that's part of the, you know, number of your adjusted gross income. And so there are certainly some ways that you can proactively manage your adjusted gross income to make sure that we predicted it to be a certain amount. And if we're a little bit off, I could be like, oh, I'm going to put some extra into a solo 401k, or I'm going to put more into my IRA this year, right? And so there's some things you can do to proactively manage it. The other, like, special gem that I mentioned earlier is these cost sharing reductions. So you're going to qualify for some subsidy, but on top of that, you may qualify for what's called a cost sharing reduction. And these are awesome. So they exist specifically within the silver category. And so if you qualify for cost sharing reductions, you have to pick a silver plan to get those reductions. And that someone who I actually met at Camp Fi gave me this tip and was like, that is the sweet spot of getting, like, a really good deal and really good insurance at a great price. And so again, I'll just say it one more time. You have to actually qualify for cost sharing reductions, which I'll get to in a minute. But if you do, you have to pick a silver plan to actually get those cost sharing reductions, because you could qualify and then pick a gold plan and you don't actually get the reductions. And it's pretty self-explanatory when you're going through the system. You'll see it. It'll kind of show you the different benefits. But what's so nice about these cost sharing reductions is they dramatically change your deductible and copays. And the deductible one, I think, is what's kind of clutch to me, especially coming from someone who I've had a high deductible plan for the past few years. So I'll give you a real example, and we had to figure it out. So for us, and again, you have to put in your zip code, your age, a bunch of other factors, number of dependents, all of this. And so we're two adults, you know, in Atlanta, Georgia, with dependents that aren't on our insurance, but that we still can claim. And if our income, if our adjusted gross income stays below $55,500, and I had to do a lot of, like, I had to put in, like, tons of different salaries to find this exact number. They don't publish this number. They do publish it as a percentage, some other number way you can figure it out, but it's a little bit complicated because it varies based on, like, household size and a bunch of things. I just kept putting into the system different salaries and seeing what the subsidy was when you started qualifying for cost sharing reductions. So for us, it's $55,500 a year. So if we make $55,500 a year in adjusted gross income or less in 2023, then we qualify for cost sharing reductions. And let me give you an example. So the deductible of a plan can go from $18,000 to $1,600. That's a huge difference.
And as a refresher, the deductible is how much you need to have in medical expenses before you start to receive coverage from your plan. So you pay a monthly premium, you then pay your medical bills, and once you reach the deductible, then your plan starts to cover services at some percentage. It could be 100%, but not always.
Yeah. So the actual plan Greg and I are on, just to give you a preview to the end of this, when we'll share some exact costs and plans, because we qualify for cost sharing reductions, my individual deductible is $800 and our family deductible, so Greg and I together, is $1,600. That's amazing. That's a really big benefit. That means, you know, after one expensive thing, basically, like, we've hit our deductible for the year. And I never hit my deductible in previous years, right? They were big and, you know, 20 grand and, you know, things like that. And just unless you had some just pretty large, complex things happening, you just, you know, you typically would not hit it, or I personally had never hit it. And so those cost sharing reductions, and understanding that they are only available at the silver level, and that you need to understand what adjusted gross income you need to have to qualify for it. And again, for us, and again, that's our situation of the number of dependents we have and, you know, some other details about our area and everything else. Our amount is, we have to have an adjusted gross income of $55,500 or less to qualify for cost sharing reductions. And we will. And so we are retired. We don't have jobs. And if we, actually, a great point of thinking about it too is, look, if you're going to make more money than that, yes, you're going to pay more. That's the spirit of the program. That's how it works, right? But if you're in your first year of starting a business, or, you know, taking some time off or something, you're going to pay less. Or in our case, early retired, where we're not trying to make money, you're going to pay less. And so that piece, I think, is just one of the more critical things to understand. The other thing, and Mike has heard more than he wants to about this, I think, is you're likely going to, I mean, about my personal situation on this, is that you're likely going to need to change some doctors and maybe even adjust some medications. So look, change is a part of early retirement. The doctors that accept, a couple of my previous doctors, like my OB is an example, who I've, you know, had for the last, you know, 10, 15 years and birthed my daughter, doesn't take any marketplace plans. And I heard that from a couple places. And I don't love that, but that can be a thing. And I knew that early on going in. I had asked my friends for some recommendation of some other OBs. And when you go in the system, it's really nice. You can enter in all your doctors and all your prescriptions or medications. And so Greg and I went and put in our doctors that were important to us. And it's like a great search functionality. You can find them. And different prescriptions, and then it'll show you which plans cover which. And so that was why, when I said it's really overwhelming, the volume of plans, once you put in some things like your doctors and prescriptions that matter to you, it really does narrow it down to where you're like, oh, okay, these are the plans that have people I want and that kind of give me more coverage. And so it eventually for us kind of narrowed it down to like a couple of plan options.
And this is a good opportunity to hit on what I mentioned earlier about HMO versus PPO. The majority of employer-sponsored plans, at least in my experience, are PPO, so preferred provider something organizations.
Yeah, I just had to Google it. Preferred provider organization. Well done.
And so those are basically an insurer having agreements with medical providers on like agreed rates. So a doctor can charge whatever they want for a visit, $1,000. But in order to accept certain insurance, the insurer is like, nope, you're going to get $100. That's our agreed upon rate. But with a PPO, you can go see whoever you want, as long as it's, quote, within this network. But you have a ton of flexibility. With HMOs, it is much lower cost because the insurer and the medical providers are in a much smaller network. And one of the big differences is that your primary care physician needs to make all of your referrals for you. So you can't just go manage your own health. It is managed for you, but you have a much lower cost. And that's why, if you were to go in and look at your options, the HMO, if you sorted by price, would be all the cheaper options. But then probably your current doctors, if you have an employer-sponsored plan, would not show up because they are not part of that smaller network. Yeah. And so that is another way that you have to think about this. And if your doctor is super important to you, if you want to be able to manage your own specialist visits, you're going to need a PPO. It's going to be more expensive. But Maggie, you went with the HMO and it works out perfectly for you.
Yeah. You know, what's funny, Mike, is when you talk about PPO and HMO, I'm very familiar with them from when I was at work and, you know, comparing these plans. But I was so focused on the subsidies and the cost sharing plans. I didn't even, when you first mentioned it the other day, I was like, I don't even know if I'm on a PPO or HMO. I just know that this plan lets me see the doctors I want to see. And I have access to, I know I have like full access to pretty much like Piedmont, Emory, and like, it's not full access, like you said, though, but I know that there's good coverage in the types of things that I need and that I kind of predict we're going to need access to. But it's kind of funny because I wasn't paying attention to the HMO PPO piece. It's an important piece to understand. I was just looking at a bunch of other things as I was thinking about this. Okay, so you're going to see your doctors. You're going to see who you have access to. There's an urgent care place like right at the top of our neighborhood as an example. We did some extra work to make sure that we were in a plan that urgent care place took, because we know like when we're sick, that's just the easiest, quickest place to go. And they have like long hours and they're just, it's quick and easy. And so figure out your specific needs and put some time into it. And also the prescriptions can be complicated. There's different tiers of prescriptions, even of like kind of how they cover prescriptions. And again, it's pretty well documented. And for every plan, there's a really detailed document that you can download. And you don't actually have to be signing up for it. This is just in the research phase. That's called the Summary of Benefits and Coverage. And it goes through every single thing in like, it's this multi-page, it's like on this one, it's like a 10-page PDF for every plan. And it shows you what you'll pay for preferred brand drugs, for non-preferred brand drugs. It's a mouthful to say. For ER visits, for urgent care visits. It'll show you what you pay in network versus out of network for all of these things. And you really got to just read the detail. Like go, as you start to narrow down the plans you want, go in there and read the detail, because we narrowed it down to like a few plans. And then we would start seeing, hey, this doesn't, like, if we end up at, you know, this ER, like we're kind of screwed, right? And we want to have better coverage for this. And so another like really quick example I'll give you is, just like you may need to switch your doctors, consider looking at some of your prescriptions. So Greg had this very specific inhaler that he had recently been put on. He has some like pretty legit asthma. I don't know, things in the, I'm pointing to my chest area, like things in the, you know, breathing chest related stuff. And he had this inhaler that was like, it was $150 every 3 months through mail order, or like 100 plus at the pharmacy. And on his old plan, on his old work insurance, and it was going to cost like $450 in this plan. But he talked to his doctor and realized there was like a newer generic version that's not really this exactly the same, but it's really close. And he was like, oh yeah, you'd probably be fine on that too. It's $10 a month on this plan at Walgreens. And if he does it through mail order, it's going to be even cheaper. And there's some like small changes, like he has to use it twice a day versus once a day on the previous one. But they're like little things. And look, when you're early retired, you can deal with using your inhaler twice a day versus once a day.
And to clarify one thing, because Maggie, this is a great point. This is something you could do independent of switching your insurance. Yes, you can totally go find generic versions or change your medications to go find something cheaper. You should just go do that today.
Yeah, totally. And what's funny is this is not a straight generic of that previous inhaler. It's a little bit different, but it's the same kind of style of it. Like they don't make a generic for the one he was prescribed, but he never pushed back on his doctor and said, hey, this is really expensive. Like, you know, and that's the thing is you totally can and should push back on that stuff today. And it doesn't always work. There are certain times you need a certain medication. Another quick tip too is, it's time consuming to request medical records and have them like sent to new doctors. So just plan in time for stuff like that, because that's one thing that both of us, Greg and I, have spent a lot of time doing lately. So one of, Mike, I said that cost sharing reduction was one of my biggest like aha and learnings and just kind of tips on this. My other biggest one is this point, I don't even know how to like summarize it other than to just tell you some stories and real life examples, but just fight for your right and ask questions. Like this is new. You're going to have to double, triple check what you get told. And I'm not sure if I would use the word discrimination, but there are some like weird things happening. And Greg actually like worked in the medical field for 20 years and understands a lot of this. And so we've discussed a lot of these scenarios, and he was like, yeah, I'm not shocked by that. And I'm like, this is crazy to me as a consumer. So here's a story. I'm just going to summarize this up with a story. Okay. I told you I had to switch OBs. And don't worry, I'm not going to talk about my OB visit, but I had gotten a recommendation from a friend. Their office was in the system. I called to make an appointment after I had already signed up for this new plan. One of the big things was that this OB was in the network. The office told, I was like halfway through the appointment process. We'd already made the appointment. She was taking some of my information. I'd said I have a Aetna plan. And then she asked for like some more detailed information about my plan. And she didn't even get to the numbers or anything yet. Like she didn't even ask for like my ID number or anything. I just said, oh, it's an Aetna CVS plan. And she was like, oh, is that a marketplace plan? And I said, yeah. And she said, oh, we don't take any marketplace plans. And I was like, well, your doctor's in the system. And she basically, long story short, I got told by two different people at that office that they don't take any marketplace plans. They didn't even look into my plan. They just made a blanket statement that they don't take any marketplace plans. And I was like, well, you did last year and you do this year according to the site. And I then called someone in the billing office of this, the hospital network that they're a part of. They have some like centralized billing. And I talked to someone in more detail about it. And by the way, not only was I told they don't accept any marketplace plans, but when I pushed back, she said, I quote, our doctors are all listed, but we file as a practice and our practice doesn't take any plans. And I was like, that's ridiculous. So I call this person in billing and have a very detailed conversation. And she's like, I don't know who told you that. Maybe we have a training issue, but we accept your plan and you should call back and make an appointment. She looked up my specific information. She was like, we accept your plan. We did last year also. And so I don't know if there's like, I actually took it as a little bit of a discriminatory practice that's happening. I may be, and not, I'm not saying towards me, I'm just saying towards marketplace plans. I don't know if they get a lower rate. I don't know if they don't like the clientele. I don't know what's happening, right? But it, to me, I was so fired up by this. I mean, Greg heard like an earful from me about this when it was happening. And I almost made, I still may, I haven't really decided how I'm going to handle it. Because first, I just wanted to go and make sure I liked the practice. I actually loved the practice and had a great experience. But I just was so frustrated by the fact that multiple people were telling me that they don't accept any marketplace plans. Like that just doesn't, it just, I don't know. Even the billing person was saying that's a training issue. We need to address that. She kind of admitted that she like knew that could happen. Like she just in a roundabout way. And so I had to like drop her name and be like, even when I called back again, they told me they didn't. And I said, I spoke to someone in the billing department and I really had to like push back. I had to call that. I literally was like the third or fourth time I had called them about this. And so I just say that to say, I actually at that point was like,
Maggie, there's Aetna's like a vein popping out of your forehead right now.
I know.
Take a deep breath. I would actually be really interested if anybody listening to the show has had experience with this. Please send us in some examples because I agree, Maggie, this one sounds a little fishy. I'd be curious to know how broadly this exists and to see some more examples.
Yes, I agree. And I will say, I just will say Greg wasn't surprised by it. And like, I don't know if they just thought I would give up and like go find someone else to go see. Okay. So anyways, I ended up like, they do take my insurance. I've had a lovely visit. I have a $0 copay. I'm sure they get paid a lower rate than some other plans like Mike was talking about that are coming from PPOs and other places. So let me talk about where we landed with our insurance for 2023 and give you.
This is what I've been waiting on, Maggie. Hit me with the final numbers. And then again, in episode 240, we're going to find out if you did your calculations right.
Yes, we will when we file our taxes. So we are paying, drum roll, please. Are you doing a drum? I can't hear it.
Yeah, I'll pick it up on my end.
We're paying $110 a month for both of us to be insured.
Yeah, incredible.
That is less than we paid. If you had taken, I mean, our kids weren't our insurance before, but if you had taken that out and like done apples to apples, we were paying, we would have been paying about $200, over $200 a month with our companies. That was with our company subsidizing it. Now that the government is subsidizing it, we are paying $110 a month. And because we have those cost sharing reductions, we have, like I said, a $1,600 a year family deductible, $800 individual deductible. Just like most plans, you know, annual physical, there's no cost for annual OB visit for a woman. There's no cost for really good rates on prescriptions. We've already had to fill some, and super competitive, cheaper when you mail in, you know, all the same kind of stuff you experience with a lot of insurance. We have what I think are really inexpensive copays. So a $20 copay for a primary care visit and a $40 copay for a specialist visit. So like last year I had to go see a dermatologist about something and I paid like $300 or $400 out of pocket for it because I had a high deductible plan. Now I can go schedule. I have this thing under my eye. Mike, you can't see it. I know you love talking about this stuff. I really need to get removed. It'll cost me $40 to go to the dermatologist to get it removed. That's exciting.
For comparison, I pay $700 a month for family coverage on my plan, and I have a $6,500 deductible. What a ripoff.
Yeah. And so, look, for everyone who is scared about insurance and early retirement, which is one of the biggest things we hear that people are concerned about, is it's great. I mean, the subsidy, what I didn't share, and I will share, is, you know, we're paying $110 a month. Let me switch to my spreadsheet, Mike. Mike's seen some of this more detailed spreadsheet. And, you know, we're on a podcast, so it's harder to share some of this. So our subsidy is about $800 a month, just to give a sense, at the estimated AGI level of 55,500, which is what we went with. Our subsidy is about $800. And for the plan we chose, we're paying $110. And the plan we chose, by the way, is called Aetna CVS. And it's clearly got some affiliation with CVS. But it's also, we were familiar with Aetna. We felt good about it. It had the coverage we wanted. We looked at some Cigna plans. Again, all of this was chosen based on like a matrix of the doctors and prescriptions that, you know, that had the best coverage for.
And again, for comparison, because I think this is really interesting, you're buying a roughly $900 a month plan, getting an $800 subsidy. I, through work, pay $700 a month and get about $1,000 subsidy. And you have better coverage on your plan. And so, yes, it is easy for me to sign up through work, and I don't have to worry about a lot of network stuff and coverage, but it is super expensive. And so, again, people should not be too afraid of looking into marketplace and alternative plans, because you can still go buy all this stuff elsewhere and probably get a better deal.
Yeah. And look, we talked about this. We shared it as like an add-on because we learned about this after we had done a previous episode about this. But there are various things where the subsidy levels could change in the future, right? So there's this thing called a subsidy cliff. There's various acts that are in place now that have the subsidies at the level they're at now. They could change down the line. But I think the point is, like, we're paying like way less than I predicted or forecasted we would be paying in medical insurance. That $100 could go up to $500 a month. Let's say the subsidies change.
And it'll still be a great deal.
That's my point. Yeah. So $110 a month is like crazy cheap to us. We never expected to pay that little. And like you said, Mike, we never expected to pay less than what we were paying before. Right. And so, yes, it could change. The subsidies could change. None of this is set in stone. But I'm an optimist. I like to believe there will continue to be affordable medical and insurance options available in the United States. And I think if there aren't, we have much bigger problems on our hands. And I am very appreciative of being able to benefit from those at this point in my life. And again, after being someone who has paid into the system for the last 20 years, I'm using it. And it feels a little weird at times, but I don't feel bad about it, if that makes sense. The other thing, mental health is a very serious issue and thing that many people are dealing with in this world. I now have been going back to therapy, and I wasn't seeing a therapist I love going to therapy. It's great. I hadn't been going for the last few years, but I love my therapist, but she's like $200 and something an hour. And when I don't really need her, it's like a nice to have thing for me. And I found a new therapist that I like, and I pay $20 a visit for a copay. And there's no limit to how I've been seeing her weekly. Just, it's like nice to talk to somebody.
That's great.
And yeah, $20 a week. It's very nice. And I never had mental health benefits that were that nice when I was working. Fascinating. Okay. We put a quick note on Instagram and did get a couple questions, but I think we've actually answered all of them, right? So somebody said, I'm always confused on this. Do you enter your predicted income or your predicted AGI? You enter your predicted AGI, which we talked about. And it's pretty clear when you're in the system, like it defines AGI for you. It's mostly clear, but yes, it's your AGI, which is your adjusted gross income. And depending on what you're doing in retirement, you need to think about what is or isn't deducted from that. Yeah. So someone said, I don't want to keep making COBRA payments if there is something of lesser cost that will cover me and my family equally. I'm going to go with, depending on your situation, there probably is something that is of lesser cost than COBRA, because COBRA is basically you paying you what you were paying and the subsidy your company was paying. And so you're not getting any subsidies with COBRA. You're paying a pretty high rate. And again, Greg and I were paying like the second half of last year, we were paying $1,300 a month for both of us on COBRA. And that was expensive. So we just went from $1,300 a month in insurance the second half of 2022 to $110 a month on the marketplace. So to answer that person's question, I hope it's helpful. And then the last question was, what are some common pitfalls or commonly made mistakes? I hope we have answered those, because I think I've answered that in all my stories about getting fired up about people telling me they don't accept marketplace plans.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think, you know, our top three, what are your top three takeaways from this, Mike?
Number one, your options for medical insurance are not limited to employer-sponsored plans, and you should explore what's out there on the marketplace specifically.
Okay, number two, do your research and plan ahead. Like anything in life, the more you research and the more time you put into it, the better you can make a thoughtful decision for your own personal scenario. Number three, because to me, it's just important enough to understand, are really understand and optimize your subsidies and the cost sharing reductions, because that's what makes the marketplace plans so attractive. And that's the sweet spot. Again, understanding for you where the cost sharing reductions kick in, and then choosing a silver plan based on that is where you can get a really solid, affordable plan that offers great benefits.
All right. Well, this was interesting. I'm very impressed by what you were able to come up with in this.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I know this was a longer episode, but this is something people have been asking about and wanting some insight on. I think they're curious for themselves, because I think that is often people's biggest fear and concern in leaving a job, is what they're going to do about insurance.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. If you've been challenged or inspired by what you've heard, please share this episode with a friend or family member. We believe that talking to friends about money improves and deepens your relationships, and it's why we started this podcast. So spread the word and share this with a friend.
You can also rate and review the show and subscribe to make sure that you never miss an episode. If you have any thoughts or questions, we always love to hear from you, and you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370 or hit us up on Instagram.
All right. Thanks, Maggie.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
Bye.